Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
The Jeep Wrangler 4xe. It's electrified. Boogie, woogie, woogie. So you can boogie, woogie, woogie up a mountain, boogie. Over creeks, or boogie, woogie, woogie through a desert where you get bit by a pit viper. So you boogie, woogie, woogie back to camp and ask your friends if they'll suck the snake venom out. When they say no, you boogie, woogie, woogie to the nearest hospital for a dose of anti-venom. And boogie, woogie, woogie your way to a full recovery. The electrified Jeep Wrangler 4xe. Learn more at Jeep.com. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Big Thing. Thank you for joining us to our Spider-Man 2 rewatch. This is the 2004 Sam Raimi version. Now, we started last week with the first one, and we're going to be doing a full rewatch of all these movies leading up to No Way Home. It's myself, Coy Jandrew, and Winston A. Marshall.
Thank you, man.
And we will be doing a full-on spoiler-heavy discussion. We watched it. We're going to talk about it. It's just going to go on and on and on. We had a lot of fun last time. We're going to have a lot of fun this time. So join us. Here we go. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's a Big Thing. Christian Harloff here. Thank you for joining us. Make sure, if you didn't already do this, that you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts are found. And make sure that you are commenting to this video here. I've been responding to all of them. I spent about 3 or 3.5 hours on the plane on the way back from New York just responding to comments, and it was a lot of fun. So, all right, Liz. I like that. Liz.
Shorten it. Listen's too long.
That's right.
Have we gotten to that point in the world now? That
English is organic. It grows.
It's just Liz. Because I'll tell you why we need to Liz. Because
I'm hot new slang. Liz.
Because I'm too fucking tired to finish the sentence. That's exactly why.
It's a good way to start a long show with shortening the word listen.
So, Winston, before we get into this, you want to talk about your buddy there?
No. Buddy.
I
know that's his
good
name.
Guy. No, he's a good guy. No, it's not Buddy. That's Chucky, not Buddy.
No, but I thought Chucky wasn't it Buddy the doll?
Good guys.
Oh.
See?
I don't like it.
Give him hold his hand. Give him a hug.
Fuck you.
So, all right. I was going to say, guys, don't worry. I know last time we dropped a couple of F-bombs for the kids.
Okay, that's the only one.
That's the PG-13.
That one's warranted. anyway, so we
set him up for it.
Yeah, so look, some people talked about this on our rewatch last week, that they said we went a little too heavy into how it's going to all relate to No Way Home, and that's fine, that's cool, but we are going to be doing that, see, because that's the whole reason for these rewatches, but we will get into the overall, just the basics of this movie, how it breaks down, all of it, and it's
you are so showing invested. Your hand. You what? Are showing your hand. See, that's the funny thing, Christian. You're not a very good I would love to play poker with you.
I don't play poker.
I can take all your money because you're just
poker.
Like, yeah, we'll get into it.
How
la,
it
la,
breaks
la.
Down.
So, Christian, let me ask you.
Yes.
What do you think about Spider-Man 2?
Look, here's the thing with this film. Because I back on the seconds. But back on the AMC days and like Collider, when I would talk about this, people used to give me so much shit because I used to say I don't think it's the best Spider-Man movie. I don't think it's the best superhero movie. I just think it's overrated. So I said I can't wait to see it to tell myself that I'm wrong, and I'm here to tell myself you weren't wrong. It's overrated. The movie is overrated, and I know I'm gonna get shit in the comments, and I know people are gonna be coming for me. And you guys said the opposite thing of what I said, because when you guys walked in, the first thing I said to both of you was, this movie is really overrated. And what you guys both said
was... defended.
No, what you both said was, yes, you know, you're not big fans of it, but you also said the same thing, which was, you think it's better than the first.
Yes.
I don't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I love the first movie, because what I said to Winston was, I think that there's a lot of, and I'll preface it by saying this, there's a lot of great stuff in this movie, there's no doubt. It's not a terrible movie. I just think that it's overrated for the amount of love that it gets. This isn't like Spider-Man 3 bad. This is just, to me, there's a lot of great stuff happening. You had mentioned it off camera that Alfred Molina is a standout, phenomenon. Obviously, you'll go into that, but it's like he's great, and there's some moments in this movie that are serious and that hit and that really, really work. But it's combined with that silly tone of the first movie that at least the first movie, it never strayed away from it. It was goofy from start to finish, and there was, you know, when Willem Dafoe pops in, it's like, but it ties into the girl goes, look, it's Spider-Man! You know, it's like, it all played into the same tone. Mm-hmm. This one, I feel like the tone is all over the place at points. And I get it. Spider-Man is a loser. I get it. I mean, they beat you over the head that he's a loser. It's like, oh, he can't deliver the pizzas. He's falling on his face. He can't do this. And then the hors d'oeuvres thing is like, I'm going to get an hors d'oeuvre. Nope. Nah, someone beat you to it, Louie. And it's so stupid. It drove me nuts.
That's the way Toby plays him. He plays him so one-note loser. And it's my big problem with the whole trilogy. And I think that arguably the third one is the least losery of them, because at least he's a weird little emo boy. But I just don't get why they thought that underdog equaled loser. Because my big problem with any genre content is when our hero is supposed to be the underdog and never becomes likable. Like, I get, like, underdogs you're supposed to root for, not be like, yo, maybe Flash beat him up for a reason.
Yeah, he's
and that's weird.
He's kind of douchey in this one. I mean, up until, you know, the end when he gets back to it and he has this whole realization that he is Spider-Man. That there is, like I said, there are some really good things that happen. I really like the scene when he flashes back to Ben and he's like, I'm Spider-Man no more and I can't take your hand. I can't do that. I thought it was a nice moment. I think there's a lot of nice moments in this. I think and I'll let you talk about this in a second, Winston, with the motivation for Doc Ock, the stuff with his wife and how that plays out, because he's not a bad guy and he has this great conversation with Peter. Right. As I said in the beginning, this is not me saying this is a terrible movie. This is a good movie. I just, when people throw their flag into the sand and say this is the best movie, I don't get it.
Well,
I don't get it.
It's a nostalgia thing. It's what a lot of us do with all sorts of stuff, where you sit there and go, this is the greatest thing that ever happened, or this is the worst thing that ever happened, when like you go back with objective eyes outside of your childhood memories and you can go, hey, let's just be real about what we're watching here. So like you said, is it a good movie? Yes, it's a good movie. But is it as good as everyone says? No, it doesn't touch Dark Knight. It doesn't touch most things in the MCU.
It doesn't touch a lot of the Spider-Man movies. The Holland movies, I think, are much better than this.
I think both Holland movies are better for sure. Obviously, it doesn't even come close to Spider-Verse. I honestly, and I'm sure I'm going to catch heat for this, I think the first Amazing Spider-Man is better than this, honestly. Because I think, obviously, you're getting a retelling of the origin story again, which when you get the same origin story over and over again can get a little, you know, monotonous.
They repeat a lot of the same beats in this movie. A lot of the same beats.
Well, and I guess that's the big part here, is I think the only thing that has some, like, major, like, upgrades from the first movie, which is why I think it also makes it better than the first movie, is Molina.
Yes, he's great in the movie. Absolutely great.
His motivations, the fact that he is essentially, which is the case with Doc Ock in most iterations, is that he is Tony Stark without the money.
Yeah.
Like, equally as smart, trying to do something great for the world.
And goes to the dark side.
And then things just go completely sideways.
Yeah.
And so instead of Tony, where it's like, now I got, like, shrapnel in my chest and I realize I'm doing wrong and I'm going to do better, Ock loses everything. And in this case, in the movie, his wife.
Right.
And so between losing all his wife and his work, that's it.
So I think, but that's the stuff that I like, right? A lot like that. And it's just a matter of, I think it's sometimes some of my biggest problems in a lot of movies is that the way that the humor is kind of placed in there out of nowhere, when these moments are really working. Like, you do see those Spider-Man moments from that we were thinking we were missing from Toby in this one in the bank. So when Spider-Man comes in, he says, "Here's your change." And yeah. He throws it. Yeah. Like, that's a great Spider-Man moment. That's yeah. Fantastic. And that's the kind of action and fights I want to see.
Sure. Fights were better, for sure.
Yeah, but like, you know, then it gets to the Joel McHale picking up the thing and she slaps
his hand. Who looks older than he does now?
Right? I know, it's bizarre. You know, but like,
makeup,
but like,
man.
And what I'll say about Sam Raimi, this dude knows how to cast background players.
How many people are
famous.
Giant? Yeah, this guy got to be 20
Lamar
years early.
On the train.
Crazy.
Yeah. Joey Diaz. Yeah, like a Bonnie.
Representing New York.
We have Bonnie Somerville. You know, you got Elizabeth Banks, obviously, in that small role. I mean, there were a couple of people who popped in, even a few different extras that popped in there, and I was, or not extras per se, but just little background players. I'm like, oh, he knows how to cast. And, like, the movie, what I will say about it is it doesn't lose its fun aspect. So I understand that people have fun watching this movie. It's just a matter of, like, the way some people think this movie's perfect, and I think it's far from perfect.
So for me, rewatching objectively, as a kid, I was okay with Toby because that's what I had. As a kid, I was just excited to see Spider-Man on the screen. As I've gotten older, Toby's been the weak link for me in all these films. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I liked this rewatch a little bit more than both of you did. I give it, like, the first one's a B+ for me, the second, this new one's an A-.
Wow,
so higher than you guys are getting it. Sure. But at the same time, I can't possibly go like, oh, I'm not excited to watch a Spider-Man movie. So what I'm excited for is when we rewatch the next of these waves, is it just they all get elevated? Am I going to be like, oh, we're watching Spider-Man? Because I've had a real problem with the Iron Man Jr. problem of Tom Holland. Yeah. So I think it might retroactively be making me enjoy. This feels like New York. This feels like a guy that's protecting his neighborhood. So I'm really curious if my Marvel experience, which I do argue might be a better film, is causing me to retroactively enjoy just how contained these are.
I don't disagree with a single thing that you said there. I think that all of that makes sense. And I think that, as I mentioned to you guys, why my daughter wanted to watch the last one first was because of exactly that.
Yeah.
She's like, he knows Iron Man already. I want to see how he became Spider-Man. Like, again, I think my biggest issue with what was the rewatch was not the movie itself. It was just the fact that, like, anytime you say anything bad about this movie or any criticism, people are just like, what are you talking about? This is the best Spider-Man. And I just can't see it. I see so much wrong with it, but I see so much right with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot right with it.
Well, I mean, it's funny. I know you said the scene that you don't love is they're trying to do the surgery on Ock. And the arms wake up and start murdering everybody.
It's not that I don't like the scene itself.
It doesn't fit the movie at all.
It's the idea of the scene where he is there and then it's like these arms have taken him over and he has now become the villain. I like that. What I didn't like about it is it starts to become a Sam Raimi B movie with all of the screaming and the scratching of the floor and every other scene. And it keeps, and I don't like when Bruce Campbell, I'm going to forgive that you repeat it, but the guy, the doctor is the criminal who killed his uncle.
Oh, no way.
I'm pretty sure.
Wait. You mean the actors? The same actor that tells him you're not, this dream you're having? Is that what you're talking about?
No. The one when, during that scene when Doc Ock destroyed it, and then at the very, there's a doctor that's against the wall and the arm comes in, and you see the four shot of him. I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but it seemed it was the same actor.
The guy that gets stabbed through the chest of the tentacles, John Landis.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the one you're talking about. Okay, that wouldn't be your... No, it was towards the end.
But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the thing about that scene in particular that I then was able to see, because there's no other elements of it in the rest of the film, is that's where you see Sam Raimi's, like, horror side.
I know.
Kind of come out.
But if it doesn't fit at the tone of the film...
No, I understand that, but I think what I would have preferred to have happen at that particular juncture, if that's going to be included in there... Because it honestly is very similar to Shazam. Shazam does the same thing.
When
you go into the boardroom, have that horror scene, but then you don't really ever see that again.
Well, you stay with the ominousness of Mark Strong, whereas the ominousness of... Alfred Molina never goes as dark as Mark Strong stays. So for me, it worked in Shazam because there's an implication of depth.
Well, part of that, I guess, would have to be the fact that that was the arms... on their own. That was not Ock. That was purely the arms looking out for their own survival, and so they're going to murder at any cost.
And I like that. I see that part of it I liked. It was the particular shots that just became the same way sometimes when I have a problem with like Tim Burton. Mm-hmm. Is that when it becomes a Tim Burton movie and goes away from the story, and it's like, oh, this isn't really trying to tell the story. This is just Tim Burton trying to do his Tim Burton thing.
Sure,
and that's what I got with that scene. It was Sam Raimi doing...
having a Sam Raimi day.
It was a Sam Raimi moment. And he loves to have people scream. Like, and even Bonnie, who I love.
Yeah.
Unnecessary.
Dude, I mean, I won't unnecessary. Lie. It was fun to see her, but it also was ridiculous to have her look out realistically and be like, what's going on? And then,
it was a Sam Raimi scream moment. He does that throughout the whole thing. Like when J. Jonah Jameson, who again steals it,
yep.
After he's so excited that Spider-Man is gone, and then they just do the shot with the newspaper, and it's like, Spider-Man no more, and they zoom into it again. It's a stylistic moment that it's just like, but it's just overdone throughout the entire film.
That's the one thing, the cheesiness that takes it up 10 notches for me, that's too much. Even when, like, doing those types of wipes, those very old school wipes. Yes. So, like, when Melina knocks him out, and then it's like, like right into the Spider-Man symbol, and then we're outside Harry's place, and I'm like, you couldn't have just done a normal transition. Right. You had to go into
and
the.
I do want
to
give a caveat. I said depth. I meant depth of evil with Melina. I think Melina is an incredible performance in this, but even he has moments that don't fit the tone of the film because I don't know that the film has a tone. And that was interesting about the rewatch.
It's got three different tones,
and that's not a movie. And whereas I would say I like Shazam as a comparison because that is a almost horror PG-13 film. I think Shazam kept a consistent tone while being a weird tone, whereas this is like maybe an action.
I guess that was the one thing. I think you're right in the sense that if we had just picked two tones to go with and blended them together,
that's more common
because Shazam did that. Shazam is this goofy coming of age superhero film mixed with that horror tone from Mark Strong.
Yeah, it's an Amblin film.
Right. Exactly. It almost felt kind of like Stranger Things, to be honest with you.
This is not an Amblin film, nor is it really. Yeah. And I don't want to be the one that's like, I mean, we're all saying negatives. Overall, we would not have the seriousness of modern day cinema in the comic book realm without this movie and X Men and the foundational stuff. And I always think that Blade doesn't get enough credit for being a not even comic-y tone. Like 1998 predates even The Matrix. But I do feel like that wasn't a $500 million change the cinema landscape film. What we need to look at with Spider-Man 2 is how it affected the choices they made, even as close to Amazing Spider-Man. Because when we watch that, that's a totally different type of movie altogether.
Right.
Well, and they had to leave this behind.
It's what it also did. I mean, I'm torn on the whole Superman 2, I lose my powers angle, right? Mm-hmm. There's part of me. You understand why they did it, because he's trying to battle this thing. He's trying to balance between being Peter and being Spider-Man. He's losing the love of his life. But again, instead of this time, it's not Harry, it's the astronaut instead. You know,
right.
And it's just replaced Harry with this guy. It's this, and then he's got to try to win her over again. It's the same beat from the first movie, but you understand why. And then he keeps losing the webs, and it's as we mentioned, that doctor beforehand, with the doctor telling him, this is just stress. Like, you got to choose. You have a choice.
I love this whole thing, and I can't tell if the doctor knows that he's Spider-Man or not, but he definitely is talking to him like, so you need some blue chew.
Yeah, that's definitely a blue chew, and the whole thing is like an ED metaphor.
Sometimes this happens to a gentleman when you're a little stressed, you know, maybe you take some time and decide, do you want to be Spider-Man or not? Do you want to have a hard penis or not?
Yeah, that was the original line.
Sam Raimi's like, all right, that's what we got to cut. We got to trip.
That's it.
You're not able to shoot webs.
That's what it was. But I mean,
I also struggle with the Jesus stuff. Like, I really had a hard time with how on the nose the whole, like, New York to stick together. Like, I know how important that is to Spider-Man. I love that about the character.
Well, remember, this is 2004. It's still 3 years removed from 9/11.
Totally fair. Yeah. And that's, I like the bond of New Yorkers.
Yeah.
I don't love the full carry across. Because if they just ended it with a bunch of New Yorkers standing in front of them, I would have bought it.
Yeah.
But since they did the thing where they're like, gotta go to 12. That's when true.
But there is that moment that is pretty emotional that I think does work when they're bonding together to protect him.
The kids thing works great. And the bonding works great. Yeah.
But also, hold on a second.
It's not easy being the one everyone counts on to keep your operation running, no matter the weather or supply chain hiccup. But we get you, Raymond in Buffalo, Maria in Miami, and Jules in Troy. Taking control of everything that's under your control. At Grainger, we're here for you with high-quality supplies for every industry, plus real-time product availability and access to experts ready to help. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You now have what has to be like some 20 to 50 people that know who you are. There's not one person that goes, you're never going to believe who this is.
Before Twitter.
Yeah. That's a good Everything's yeah, safer before point. Twitter.
Yeah, it's before Twitter. Twitter, that shit would have been spoiled. Like,
it would have been live streamed, dude. Yeah, it would have been.
Cool yeah. with Spider-Man,
100%.
Aunt May's dead before he's off the train.
Absolutely. And all that. Aunt May, by the way, who I love and think's great. The woman is clearly in like her mid-60s, almost 70s, right?
Yeah.
There's no way with that Doc Ock stuff that she ain't having a heart attack.
Thrown off a building twice.
Twice. And then, but she does smash him in the head with an umbrella, so there's that.
Great work. Great team up.
The question I have for you guys that I really want to know is, do you guys think that Spider-Man during all of this shaves his balls? And I'll tell you this. the reason why, because you can't swing around the city without shaving your ball.
You'll chafe.
And if there is anything that is scarier than seeing a black cat, ladies and gentlemen, this Halloween. It is.
There is Felicia Hardy.
It's shaving your balls with anything other than Manscaped. And whether it comes to below the waist grooming, there's no need to carve your pumpkins this Halloween because Manscaped is here to upgrade your grooming experience. Come on, guys. Go from a bite-sized candy bar to a king-sized candy bar. Winston knows what I'm talking about. Wow. And join the 2 million men worldwide by going to Manscaped for 20% off and free shipping. But you use that code BIGTHING. That's right. Appropriate. So there's a lot that we do here. And I'll tell you, I love, you guys know, I screamed to the heavens about Manscaped. And I one time screamed to the heavens when I nicked my balls without Manscaped. And you can't do that. And I always thought it was, there's nothing that's gonna save me. Bullshit. Manscaped to the rescue. Because if you've ever trimmed your balls and you turned it into a Freddy Krueger film, that's nothing you want to do. Manscaped is here to save the day and make sure that you're smelling fresh with their new refined body wash. Guys, ladies love their signature scent, and it will scare away the vampires. The Performance Package 4.0, it includes the Weed Whacker, which is a total game changer to men's hygiene arsenal. The Weed Whacker is a nose, it has a nose and a hair trimmer. Have you guys used this one yet?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Not the nose trimmer.
Oh, dude, it's phenomenal. You get addicted to it, though. You just sit there, and it's like nothing. Nothing will, you won't see anything. It's wow. Incredible. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to the Performance Package 4.0. There's the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. It's got that Shears 2.0 nail kit. They've got a bunch of other life-changing products on their website, so make sure that you check it out. Now, what you have to do is you get 20% off and free shipping, but you got to use that code BIGTHING at manscaped.com. That is 20% off and free shipping with the code BIGTHING at manscaped.com. Say trick or treat to your beautiful new Halloweeny with Manscaped.
Wow.
There was so many puns.
Good stuff. Right?
I felt left out with the meats, but I can say proud Manscaped member. It's, and it's actually
I got the 3.0. I got the last.
You got
that last batch. You got it. Yeah,
4 is that much better.
It's like, have you ever seen the first Terminator?
Yeah.
So when they go to the future scene, they've got that futuristic when they're hunting all the humans, and it's got that light coming down.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Wow. It misses nothing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because the light on the 3.0 is pretty good, but you're telling me they upped it even. Wow.
Kyle Reese could not hide from this. I'll tell you that. But we ain't talking about Kyle Reese. We're talking about Peter Parker. We're talking about Harry and Harry's that scene when he's at the party and he's just like. Slaps him in the face.
Slaps him twice.
Like a biatch.
Here's the problem. Here's my problem with that. And this is where I agree with you that the biggest weak link in this trilogy, in my opinion, which sucks to say, is Toby.
Yeah.
Because for everything that we're going to see again in Spider-Man 3, I actually kind of enjoy how sadistic Harry gets and what Franco does with that. It's one of the few bright stars in that movie, in my opinion. This is that moment for Peter. Even though he loves his friend, be like, put hands on me again and see what happens.
Right.
Because he's got a better arc. Franco's got a way better, more interesting arc.
Yeah, like, he's pissed off about his dad.
And you buy the betrayal, you buy the decision she makes. By the time you get to the third one, it's actually a redemption moment when he does do something heroic.
Yeah.
But in this film, you see that break of him understanding the depth of it. You see the father and son stuff. You see the friendship betrayal. You see this, but like, there's so much more going on with Harry, and Spider-Man just stays a little bitch.
He does the same thing the whole time. Like, every single time, let's not talk about it right now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's always deflecting. And again, if this is a scenario where obviously you can't go full Spider-Man on him, you'll kill your friend.
Right.
You can't do that. But I don't know a single friend that I have. You slap me once, maybe I deserved it. You slap me a second time, touch me again and see what the F happens.
Right.
See, I caught that one.
I've
been saying a lot of shit, but I, you know,
that's all right. But you're right. It's like, But it wasn't like in a hallway. It was at a party.
At a party.
In front of a lot of people. And then he gets double bitched because he's like, hey, stupid, take the picture of your girlfriend marrying my son.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you get dope. And he's just like, all right.
He just like, it's not a character. How do you root for that? Well, how do you root for that guy?
The whole, it's one thing we've all loved. Like, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Ever.
And Jim Carrey Great is example. Like a lovable loser in that one, right? But he's not like, you don't have to beat me over the head with the fact he's not tripping over every step. He's not, he can't pay every single bill. His aunt bitches him. His girlfriend bitches him. Everyone's bitching Peter Parker throughout this entire thing. Like, dude, the beginning with the pizzas. It's like everything.
Just lean with the words.
The messed up thing about it is the only person that he has the stones to stand up to is his dead uncle.
Right.
That is literally the only person. Right. He's like, you ain't gonna be talking to me like this. I ain't Spider-Man no more, Hunk. You stay dead.
Right.
Everybody else, auntie, I actually got him killed. Get out of my house. It's like, yo, I can't love you anymore. Get out of my house. Hey, yo, what? You love me more than you love your little friend Spider-Man? Slap, slap. Jonah's like, I'm not gonna give you no money. Like, he literally stands up to no one.
Yeah.
And I think the bigger problem with that is, and we were kind of discussing this also before we started recording too, is the fact that when you go to the comics, when you go to the animated series, when you go to any other iteration of Spider-Man, the idea of that super nerdy, super unconfident Peter Parker has been gone since high school.
Right.
It is still there, but he uses it as a facade.
Like Clark
the way,
yeah.
The way that Clark does the same thing, yeah. The way that Bruce pretends to be this kind of asshole, but he actually is always in control. Since we're missing the real science nerd here, minus a couple like, oh, the machine's going to do this, you're not giving us something to look at him and go, wow, he is actually a fully formed person here.
Right.
With a little thing.
The struggle, though.
It's still the Big Bang Theory thing. It's still punching down at geeks. And it's still, like, for me, in this one, because you see Mary Jane love him so fully, what is there to love? I love the character of Mary Jane too much for her to actually be such a weak-willed character to love that guy. Like why would she leave an astronaut for that guy?
But like, what is he, the first movie I kind of understood, like, because he was always kind of, he was kind to her.
Yeah.
He was looking out for her. He was always charming in his own way. But in this one, he's just so detached.
He's stringing her along.
But I do understand that, and I will make it very clear, the dilemma that he's got. I like the dilemma of how do you balance your life when you're trying to show everyone you're normal when you're Spider-Man.
Right.
And it's like, and you're not just, it's not like the MCU when you're involved in the big Thanos angles. You're just trying to stop dudes from robbing banks or robbing whatever it is. Like, so even that scene, which I do like, it's such a like premonition of what we're about to get in Spider-Man 3 with the raindrops keep falling.
Like when one strut down the street, I was like, it's coming.
Because when you get that music, Sam Raimi loves to do that music video that everything's cool now, and but he's got the hot dog in his mouth. And I like this moment when he looks over and he sees the robbery happening and he's like, nope. Just gonna do my thing. I like that angle. I thought there's tons of really good moments.
Works.
Well, yes.
I walked in on you when you had just got to the part where the dude is in the alley, be like, help, and he's like getting his ass whooped. And you have the camera angle where you kind of see Toby in the foreground, and you see this dude getting just completely mollywopped.
Yeah.
And it cuts to Toby, cuts back to the dude, please, anybody, and then he's just like,
like
off.
People die because of Toby in this movie.
That's the thing, though, that it's like this, because that scene, though, is my biggest problem with this iteration of Spider-Man, because this, even him being Spider-Man to help, is selfish. Like, everything is selfish. It's not, it's like, oh, I'm Spider-Man now because I feel like now I can do it. It's like, well, what about the guy that got his ass kicked because you weren't ready for it at that point?
The only thing was the child in the fire, because they take the same beat from the first one about the fire.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many literally cut and paste from the first movie. I'd forgotten how parallel they were.
That's why I think I like the first one better, because they did it.
It's original.
It's original. And that's why I also, when people are saying, oh, the second one is so different and so, like, game-changing. It's like, it's game-changing in a certain aspect, because I agree with you guys.
The villain.
But it also allows, because there are serious moments, and the fact that making it very clear, if this movie doesn't come out in 2004 when it doesn't do the kind of box office, it doesn't allow you to do other movies that eventually become very successful. It was groundbreaking in that aspect and never will take away from that. And I don't take away anything that Sam Raimi did in this movie. I'll say it 1,000 times over. It has nothing to do with the movie itself. I just never understand how people...
It's too high.
It's at such a pedestal. I don't get it.
Again, just too locked in that nostalgia, because the truth is, the minute you hit Batman Begins... all of this changes.
I agree with you.
Which is only 4 years later.
Right.
Wait, No, three, because, wait, Dark Knight was 08.
Yeah, Dark Knight was 08.
So that makes
06. You keep saying that. 2007 was Spider-Man 3.
I'm talking about 2. Two
is 4.
It's 4, and then Begins is 6, isn't it?
I think it was 2005.
So it's a year later.
It's 2005.
Yeah.
So we're talking, it's about to change.
Quick. It changes. Look, Nolan, when Nolan did, and we should do a rewatch of the Batman. Oh, it's a lot of them. But we should do a rewatch of, at least
it's
Nolan.
It's not as bad as you think.
No?
Four because plus three.
The four, you got the two Burtons, the two Schumachers, the three Nolans.
Yeah, that's if we don't do animated, though, because there's a lot of animated.
Well, I mean, okay.
And then
I
Adam
mean,
West.
What kind of animator are you talking? Are you just talking Mask of the Phantasm? Or are you talking about the entire
There's three
theme?
That are in the Mask of the Phantasm there's arc.
Yeah, and there's also the Joker one. That's the third.
That's the Batman Beyond. So there's Sub-Zero, which is the second one after Phantasm.
And then the Return
and
of the
then
Joker.
That's the three. Yeah, that's the trilogy.
I don't know. But that's we have a while before the Batman movie comes out. So we could.
That'd be fun.
We could. But anyway, but what Nolan did with that franchise in general. But I think that Raimi helped that, right? Because you look 100%. At what Burton did, and as much as I say Burton makes his own movies sometimes, and it's just all like I think that's why the second one suffered. I know people love the Batman Returns, but I don't, because of that problem. But you cannot deny what Tim Burton did for superhero films in 1989.
Right, mm-hmm.
He was without that movie, you don't get a lot of these.
Well, I would make the argument that the Raimi trilogy is taking its cues from Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. You're being honest with you. I know how bad he did it much better.
Yeah.
But that same kind of
Silver
camp,
Age camp.
It's the Silver Age camp because you go back and look at Batman and Robin. It's like never leave home without it.
But remember,
and the transitions and everything.
It's very reminiscent to what like George Lucas. When you look at George Lucas, what the movies that he made, the Star Wars movies, and the serialization, the things that he fell with, the Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon. That's all there. It's all present. It's all stuff that he grew up with that you see. Right. Sam Raimi. It's the same thing. Sam Raimi loves the B movie. Loves it. I mean, you look at some of the even in that scene we're talking about there's a throw to the Evil Dead when he's got with the saw and everything too. So there's you're asking him not to do what he loves when he at that point he had just made a successful massive Spider-Man film just 2 years beforehand, and to give him all the credit in the world, it usually takes about 3 years to do a big sequel like that, especially at that time, and be successful and not. He did it in two, and he made a very successful film because in 2004, when this thing comes out, like I said, to this day, people swear by this film, and in 2004, this is a big movie, money making. There's nothing really to compare to. And you made a great point, though, with the Batman thing. I think what changes with the Batman thing is people and the narrative of comic book movies in general, because he took it so serious, Nolan, that other movies started to do that. And the MCU was able to do that a lot with a lot of movies. There was a lot of camp in MCU movies, too, but there's a lot of big moments.
But it works.
Yes.
You're not taking yourself... Like, because doing that kind of camp becomes a farce. So, to do a farce, you have to take yourself
beyond
seriously.
And it doesn't hold up.
Exactly. So, like, I look at Iron Man, and there are plenty of those moments for sure.
Yeah.
But think about how grounded that movie actually is. But then you get the moments of like the SUV slamming on trying to get away from Warmonger and all that kind of stuff.
And this is Sam Raimi though, to cut to the driver though, would have pushed it in his face screaming. Like that's the difference.
Right.
It's like you know to balance that. Exactly.
That's the problem. That's because the same thing happens. It's the SUV, the family is screaming, but they're not staring down the lens of the camera.
Exactly.
Paying attention
but
to
the
scene.
That's the B movie thing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's
what I think hurts
these. You're talking about. Yeah, that's because this story we talked about it when we did the rewatch for the prequels. Which people keep asking me about. Don't worry, they come like this airs on Friday. So the Empire One airs today. So you guys will be you're good to go. It's the same thing I'm talking about with the prequels. That there's just certain things in the prequels that are very cheesy, don't work. But if you look at the overall blueprint of the movie, it's phenomenal. The overall blueprint of this film is great. It's just a matter of that style. If you love that style, if you keep the nostalgia, I think you'll watch this every single time and feel the same way you did about it, and then you'll be like, yeah, this review deserved a dislike, right? Because
it's inevitable to come.
Of course. And I understand that because I think there's certain movies that I love that I don't want to like acknowledge that just don't hold up. And I'd be like, nah, you guys don't know what you're talking about.
You say anything bad about Lethal Weapon, I'm coming to your house.
Yeah, this Lethal Weapon, man. I just watched that recently.
So good, man. Holds up great.
One and two.
I mean, for me, it's the Rush Hour films at all.
Everybody's got one.
Of course, of course.
Everybody's got a franchise that's like infallible.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people feel that way about this film.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it, and it's a matter of where you saw it, how you saw it, how old you were when you saw it. It does do a lot, but what I will say about it, and because we haven't done a lot of this on this episode thus far, how it's going to tie in No Way Home, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, I think that there's a couple ways that you could obviously do it besides the obvious that Doc Ock shows up. But when he's going through that experiment.
Yeah, thought of that too, rewatching it.
Yeah, man. Like, that's how you can make that work, because not only do you see this whole big thing open up. Like, mm-hmm. that's when Strange and Holland could pop in at that moment, because the door opens up because whatever he's doing in that experiment.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is they mentioned Doctor Strange.
They did. They were trying to come up with a name for Ock. And they were
I loved when he said, taken. It's already taken.
And how much did you guys think of vibranium every time they showed that metal? They were like, it's the rarest in the world. I was like, that would have been vibranium in 10 years.
Yes.
They literally had a fake metal.
So there's ways to really tie this in.
Yeah,
I agree. I 1,000% agree, especially that Doctor Strange thing. I was like, holy crap. I see where they're going with this. Side note, I just wanted to look up when these movies were coming out. That 2007 was a terrible year for the end of trilogies, because it wasn't just Spider-Man 3, it was Rush Hour 3. Those were two of the worst third conclusions ever.
It's funny, yeah. Well, I remember, and we'll get into it when we watch Spider-Man 3, but that movie, I don't blame Raimi for that one, because there was so much stuff that was going on behind the scenes, but like. Anyway, we'll get into that. But as far as how it all ties in, you can see that working. The Elizabeth Banks angle goes nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
That also sucks. Like, we don't dive into that at all.
Yeah, she's fantastic too.
Yeah, she's really good in it. And those moments, by the way, with J. Jonah Jameson, are just
highlight.
I laughed really loud when she said, "Your wife can't find a checkbook." He's like, "Thanks for that." So good.
Like, dude, J.K. Simmons is the movie.
So good.
He's all three of these movies. And I would even say, even the last, like, when Peter does go off him in the next one, that shit's hilarious.
Yeah.
But then even, like, at the wedding where he's like, call the caterer. Call Mark. The caterer? Tell him don't open the cabinet.
Yes!
That's
authentically Jonah.
It really is.
It was really good.
It really, really is.
I would say out of the Sam Raimi movies, the thing he gets the most comic right is Jonah, and the thing that fits all of the films, even while their tones are changing, is J.K. Simmons. It's incredible that he works in any scene. It's incredible that he works in the MCU. It's incredible that he feels like the comic books. Like, there's a beautiful art to what J.K. Simmons brings to Jonah Jameson. And I also want to say that another way I could tie in is the special effects in this are arguably better than a lot of the MCU. Like, the fact that the practical suit looks practical, the fact that Spider-Man swinging around actually looks like someone with some weight swinging around,
all of
those things make me go like, oh, this in the MCU next to Tom Holland, that's going to work.
It's funny you say that, because like, I was watching Black Widow the other night, and I said to myself, there's so much they still haven't learned to just keep overdoing the CGI stuff, right?
Wait.
It's like, and now I think because of everything that's gone on in the world is that, because of the inflated budgets, and you can't really justify because of the box office, that maybe they're going to start pulling back to practical effects more pulling back, because that's the type of stuff, like, that's what's been working in The Volume for Mandalorian and other things too. Like,
and look at the sets in this movie. They have full size sets. They actually burned a building. You can feel the Daily Bugle be a place you can walk through.
I can't
say that about most sets in the MCU.
No, it's true. I agree with that. I think that hopefully they go back to doing more stuff like that. And especially if they start using, like, I think the volume technology is going to start taking over in general, especially now that Disney really has a lock on it because of the Mandalorian.
Can you imagine the Doctor Strange visuals you could have in that space? Going through space-time and changing reality. You could do the What If finale in that.
I've not seen What If yet. Not in general. The last, like, four.
So what you can do with that alternate reality warping insanity, can you imagine that in the Volume?
Obviously, it's not what this is about, but you need to watch that, because you want to talk about implications for No Way Home. All of it's coming.
Yeah. That's why I am going to watch it. I've liked very much what I've seen inside of What If.
Maybe even before Eternals, if you have time.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I'm going to see that soon. So, all right, before we get back into the Spider-Man stuff, you speak of Sam Raimi and you speak of his horror background. Well, there is nothing that screams horror more than Shudder. I don't know if you guys know about Shudder. If you guys have been paying attention to Shudder, if you haven't heard about it, we're very excited to be working with Shudder. Shudder is the Netflix of horror. It really is. And summer's over, guys. There's a chill. There's a chill in the air and spooky season. It's arrived. So get to watching scary movies. There is no better place for horror than Shudder. It's kicked off at 61 Days of Halloween, which is a two-month supersized celebration full of new movies and series like a new season of Creepshow and VHS 94. And let me tell you this. During the Schmodown season, I get 87,000 texts from Bibiani usually throughout the season. However, there's a two-month time I never hear from him, and that's right now because he's on Shudder. And that's another reason why I love Shudder. And there's a brand new installment of VHS 94 in the acclaimed found footage anthology franchise. And that's the start of Shudder's unbeatable Halloween lineup. There are new specials from Elvira and Joe Bob Briggs, a new season of the Blip Brothers Dragula, their new docuseries Behind the Monsters on the origins and pop culture of dominance of your favorite modern movie monsters. There's so much more. Some of the titles that they have is Slasher, Flesh and Blood, Carrie, Superhost, Martyrs Lane, Creepshow Season 3, Elvira's 40th Anniversary, Very Scary, Very Special, Seance, VHS 94, Joe Bob's Halloween, Hoedown, Horror, Noir, so much. And you can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for $5.99 a month or $56.99 for the year. Shudder has the largest, fastest-growing, curated section of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. It is the Netflix for horror. There are supernatural terrors, edge-of-your-seat thrillers, and a shocking horror added every week. You'll have unlimited access to stream ad-free on all your favorite devices. Now, that could be iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Xbox One, Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, Chromecast, Roku, Android devices, everything. So you got to check it out. Do it. And I will tell you that the Creepshow, for me, when I was younger, I loved it. Loved it. Very excited for this new season, because that's something I'm going to be checking out. And I was excited to get, because, like, as you guys know, horror for me, it's got to be really, really good. It's got to be something I want to see. And when I really want to see it, I wind up really enjoying it. And especially now that people keep, I mean, Koi knows, that people keep asking me to do a horror division. And
it's
it's a thing. And if you're going to train for a horror division, you do it at Shudder. So there's a vast selection of content, extensive international library, range of genres and type of movies from old classics to modern favorites. Try Shudder free for 30 days. Go to Shudder.com and use that promo, Big Thing, S-H-U-D-D-E-R, Shudder, and use the code Big Thing. For YouTube channels, we will have this, if you guys know, we'll have this link in the description, so just check that out. So that's it. So go and check it out. Shudder, do it, and let the English see you do it.
Watch some Brendan Meyer movies. They're on
Shudder.
Yeah,
he's got a ton of them, for sure.
Has he seen a lot of horror films?
Tons, man.
He's been in a lot of them, too.
Well, yeah. I know he's in a decent amount of films. I didn't know horror was
that's like his thing.
I'll tell you what's a horror is that haircut he's got.
It's impressive. It is Chucky-esque.
And the only reason I say that, Winston, that way, because we saw him at the bar in New York.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what is with... It's like if we shave Chucky's head around the sides, it's like a Dutch boy kind of like...
Oh, and then so it's blonde underneath.
So he's actually going for the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 3 look.
I don't know what it is.
He's just going to go full emo My Chemical Romance.
It's not Flock of Seagulls style, but it's like
Devon Sawa fought Chucky.
It's just like an early 90s. Yeah. It's like an early 90s, like terrible haircut, right? And I said, no. I'm also been this guy. Like, I'm never the guy, like, if everybody's talking about somebody's bad breath or about the friend's got the bad breath, you'd be like, dude, you need to brush your teeth. I'll be the dick.
Yeah.
You know, and take a mint.
Yeah.
Right. And the same thing, I'm like, I'm not going to let this kid keep walking around. Everybody's shitting on his haircut. And I said to him, if I offend you with this question, you can tell me, but that's got to be for a role, right?
He goes, absolutely.
He's been away filming. Thankfully, that was tied to it.
He goes, absolutely. This is for a role. This is for, yeah. I mean, he's like, I would never be able to get this. And he's going into the whole thing. And I was like, okay. And then I introduced them to somebody at the live event. I go, this is Brendan Meyer. Don't worry. This haircut is for a role. And he goes, thank you.
It's that intense. It's that necessary of a disclaimer.
He does. He looks. I called him Lady Hawk. That's who he looked like.
Yeah.
He looked like Lady Hawk from the movie Lady Hawk with Matthew Broderick.
Well, I mean, that haircut would get him Bryce Dallas Howard. So, you know, maybe
it's true.
He's gotta,
sometimes
he's
magic
hold on
works.
To it, you know,
Bryce Dallas Howard.
The next movie, Felicia Hardy.
Oh, okay.
Or no, Gwen Stacy.
Oh, with the worst haircut in the trilogy, which is saying a lot.
All right, but let's hop back. Let's hop back into the movie itself. And then so the train scene, obviously the relationship.
That sequence is incredible.
It's a great sequence.
Yeah,
and it's got a lot of emotion to it. And I think that that's where we, I think it justifies our complaint about it. Like you have a moment like that, which is so great and it's so emotional. But then when you if you coupled that with that scene. With the Bonnie scene, or with the doctors running away from the arms and screaming, you'd be like, these are two different films.
I think the moment that gets me that I'm like, what the hell, like is when he's then I understand he's knocked out, but when he's captured by Ock, he's delivered to Harry, and Harry pulls the mask off, and he falls back, right, and then Peter wakes up and he goes, oh. Just like immediately, like it literally was not like he was like he wrapped him with styrofoam.
Right, right.
Like I get that Spider-Man's strong, but it's like barbed wire and crap. Like there's no cuts. Like if there's nothing.
He doesn't have strong skin.
Well, that was the same issue that I had with the first movie was that Willem Dafoe takes him up on the roof.
Yeah,
and he's got him, and
they just keep his mask up, and it's the same beat.
It's the same beat.
And my thing is the third act here works better than the third act in the first one, so it gives it slight elevation. And the Mary Jane stuff works better in this one than the first one, except the kiss. The kiss is iconic for all of comic book culture.
I agree with that. I think
but the coffee shop scene is brilliant.
It is.
Like, talking, the car flying in. That's so Spider-Man comics in the 60s.
Yes, but even though it does play into the fact that we still don't understand exactly why she's got the same infatuation for him.
Yeah,
that
doesn't track.
First one, but
that doesn't make sense. The other thing that doesn't make sense is how does nobody immediately figure this out? First of all, if you're going to capture Peter Parker, why are you throwing a car at him?
And then he's hiding under the rocks and then he bursts out for some reason.
Oops, what dropped? Oh, okay. It's like, first of all, if you're Doc Ock, why are you throwing a car at the dude you're trying to kidnap to find out where Spider-Man is? Yep. If you kill Peter Parker, you don't know where Spider-Man is. So first of all, that doesn't make sense. Second of all, the fact that he grabs her, rolls her under the flip, and then flip, and she doesn't immediately go, how the hell did you do that?
Right, right.
You didn't even see
it. Well, upstairs.
But that happens throughout the movie, right?
Yeah. Because
no, I'm with you. So, like, he's going to get the robbers, and he's on his bike, and he has a spidey sense, and he flips over and lands, and the kids go, how did you do that? Well, this is a moment for funny humor.
My vegetables.
Eat your vegetables. Oh, she's been telling me that. Fine, the kids get it. What about the other 2,000 people on the street?
In New York City. In a pandemic, right. People would have saw that.
The kids I'll give you. The
no
kids, the kids I'll give you.
We're playing
but
that
everybody,
no Twitter
nobody
card
else
pretty
is paying
hard.
Attention to this guy flipping into the sky.
Yeah.
So it's like, but this is the question that kind of lends into it. Were we a lot more forgiving to the superhero tropes back then because there weren't a lot of superhero movies back then? There were a bunch, but not like there are today.
I think that's why Marvel isn't doing Secret Identities, because Secret Identities don't work. Everyone in the MCU is exposed. Like, right. Iron Man revealed who he was in the first film. Secret Identities don't work inherently because Twitter, because we look at the world.
Right.
And back in the early 2000s, they had the concept of secret identities that I think we've kind of given up on.
Right.
I'm really curious how the Batman handles it, because it's in the modern day of acknowledging, like, wait, that guy's chin looks like Batman.
It would happen, but I think the problem is, since you're writing this and you know all those types of things, you cannot have that happen in a big area. You have to think about that. Like you said, if it's just the little kids that were there, maybe they were playing ball in an alley and they see him do
right.
The flip.
That's different. That's different.
That's one thing.
Yeah. Not Fifth
to
Avenue.
See Fifth Avenue, like, watch him do a flip off of a moped, land like he didn't get hurt
because
they were going
today.
40 miles per hour. That doesn't make sense.
And it's not like the siren. Like, it's literally attention, attention, attention. There's sirens. There's a chase. Everyone would be watching it. No, even in New York, everyone's watching a chase.
Right, but that's what I mean, though. Like, back then, on set, if someone says that to Sam Raimi, they go, that's Spider-Man. Movie. They'll get over it.
I don't think
that flies today.
No, I agree.
And that's why I'm curious when he does Doctor Strange. Like, I don't think that's why I know you were a little nervous about him doing it. I don't think we're going to get. I think that because in 2004, the approach. That's why I give Sam Raimi a lot of credit in the fact that I don't think Sam Raimi is going to be like Tim Burton, where it's just like, no, this is how I make movies. That's it.
Yeah.
I think you'll see a bit of it. I think you'll see some of the extreme kind of close-ups and those types of things. But I think that because of 2003 when they shot this movie, very different. And he's coming off of that massive movie that he made already. So he had kind of the carte blanche. He essentially was Nolan at that point because It wasn't supposed to be Spider-Man. It was supposed to be Star Wars. Star Wars was supposed to be talking the town, and it was supposed to be Matrix was supposed to be talking the town, mm-hmm. and it wasn't after the sequels. It was still Spider-Man. Spider-Man's coming off of this sequel, so he was the guy. Yeah. So when you are the guy, you can say, yeah, I'm going to do my shots. I'm going to do my horror movie because it doesn't tie into anything else.
Right.
It doesn't connect into any other universe.
17 years later, you're a director of an episode of TV versus a movie.
Yeah,
you're in the middle of a series.
But for him, he's not. This is just a Sam Raimi movie. So I can make Sam Raimi Spider-Man in 2003. You can't make Sam Raimi's Doctor Strange today because it's not part of it. You can absolutely do the tropes. You can do the things that you did and not change a damn thing and make that movie in 2004 and have people love it for what it is. But you cannot, in 2021, have people who watch these movies all the time and not say, how did they not notice him flipping over the cap?
What they might do is make it all the extreme Sam Raimi stuff. Because if they're making Doctor Strange as weird and connected and otherworldly, they might just have it like all cranked up to 11 so that big push-ins feel normal because you're like, oh, you're experiencing this nightmare reality.
I would even venture a guess that then he goes away maybe from the B-movie camp mm-hmm. and goes actual full thrilling horror in that regard.
Right, which he can do great.
Right.
And because that's what they were going to do with Derrickson. But then Derrickson said they didn't want to do that, though.
But I think that's probably why they got Raimi, because they were probably like, look, we're already thinking about doing Spider-Man, like letting all these Spider-Man.
Dragman Hell Raimi, not the Evil Dead Raimi.
Right. I think that's exactly what happened, is I think they probably pitched it to him like, look, we know that that's kind of what you've wanted to do anyway.
Yeah.
And we know that that's what you're really good at. So not only would you probably have a say, because you know, with Infinity War and Endgame, what I thought was so brilliant, they had this almost like a Justice League of directors, where the directors from each of the franchises would all sit with the Russos and together.
Right.
So like you would have Peyton Reed, whenever any Ant-Man character, he would be on set and would partially direct
James Gunn
to make
right
sure
there.
That.
Yeah. Well, it's the same point that we made last
week. That's a balance of tones that this doesn't have.
Right.
Right.
But the same tone, the same thing that I'll bring up, and probably bring it up in every episode so people are aware, the difference is that, and I always bring up Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
When Edgar Wright came on to Ant-Man, as we said last week, he was, this is before the MCU.
Yeah.
So he was signed on. So once the MCU became the MCU and they're like, okay, we want you to make an MCU movie, he's like, that's not what I signed on to.
Right.
It's the same thing that if Sam Raimi was signed on for Spider-Man 2,
yeah,
and then Marvel came and said, well, now we want you to do an MCU. He's like, well, that's not what I signed on for.
Right.
However, the MCU has been established now, so when Sam Raimi signed on this time, it was the MCU.
That's fair.
So they're going to have those meetings with him and go, look, we want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We want you because you're Sam Raimi.
Right.
But can you do this for us?
It needs to hit these beats. It needs to end here. It needs to feature this. And I think it's going to be special. I think it's going to be good. I just, you know, rewatching these movies, there's obviously a little trepidation.
Isn't it weird, though, that I thought about this, too, how much of a splash would it have made if Sam Raimi would have come back to direct the third Spider-Man?
It would have been dope, but it's the same director from the first two, right?
I get why. I understand why.
They started off in phase one being kind of like, hey, we'll kind of mix
it
up.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
But from then, they've been like, whatever director gets this is their franchise.
That's their franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
How insane is it going to be if Doctor Strange 2 ends with Spider-Man 4? His Spider-Man 4.
Right. I mean, well, what if that's what you keep saying? I don't know if they're going to be ballsy enough to do that.
I think Sony would.
I don't think the MCU will. I think Sony.
No. It won't be a Marvel film. It'll be a Sony film. And you know what Sony needs? More franchises.
And because they set up the multiverse that people.
How insane would we get? I'm not saying this is happening. How insane would it be if we get a Spider-Man 3, a Garfield 3, a Toby 4, and a Spider-Verse 2?
Right, when you say Garfield 3, I immediately
say Murray's Garfield Odom. 3.
Odie.
We could do that. We could have a shared universe.
Yeah.
And if you're No Way Home is the title, I guarantee, almost guarantee, 90% guarantee, Tom's going to get stuck in Sony. I think Tom leaves the MCU with this film. I think he doesn't come back? Yeah, I think he has No Way Home.
No, the only reason why I disagree with that is the fact that very clearly, with Strange being involved in everything else, I think it's one of those situations where you've just merged worlds. I don't want to spoiler anything for certain things that are out, but we've had enough clues in certain movies that have happened that all you're going to do is you've opened up the sandbox where Sony now, their sandbox is actually connected to the MCU one, but they're going to play in their own little area, which lets stuff free flow.
I'm wondering if that separates at some point, though.
I wonder.
The title just makes me think some things. You know,
it could
like
be.
Just I mean, we'll see.
All right,
I like not knowing. It's more exciting.
Yeah. Before we move on, obviously, Koji Andrew is the least out of shape out of the three of us here in the room, and that is because he does not use Fitbod, but he should.
Ooh, Fit sponsor, I'm in.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, honestly, have you heard of Fitbod?
No.
Oh, okay, you're, well,
Strap in.
This is right. You think you were jealous because you didn't get the butcher the box. No, listen to this. So as you know, Coy, if you repeat the same exercises over and over and over again, it just makes you lose sight of your progress or can kill your motivation. So what we don't want you to do is get stuck doing the same old workouts. Making progress towards the future means overcoming new challenges. What FitBod does, it creates a fitness program that continually adapts with new exercises and dynamic intensity that adjusts to how you're progressing. So you'll be challenged to meet your goals at your own pace. Now, perfection's an illusion. We all know that. But there's always a higher level to strive for that looks different for everyone, especially when it comes to fitness. There's no perfect body that everyone can achieve, but what we can do is continually become a better version of ourselves. There's no workout that's a one-size-fits-all. FitBod creates a fitness program that continually adapts to you. So you stay challenged with new exercises, pacing, and intensity based on where you are and where you want to be. So there's a lot of great stuff with this app in general. You can pick workouts tailored to your equipment and your goals. The app has very clear and easy-to-follow instructions. It's great to balance like muscle groups, and you can recover really, really fast for the next workout. I already, from using this thing, I was in New York, and it's like it right away. If I ate something bad, popped up on my app, and it was something like, "Well, look, this is what you need to do. This and this. You work it off. I feel stronger and faster." And thank you to the personalized training on side of the app in general. FitBod creates a program based on your unique body experience and your environment. Whether you're exercising 3 days a week or twice a day, every workout is scientifically proven to be better than the last. FitBod's workouts are balanced to avoid overworking muscles with varied exercises to keep you sharp. It's very easy to use and even has HD video tutorials to make learning new exercises a breeze. Personalized training can be tough on the budget, but FitBod, it's only $9.99 a month, or it's $59.99 a year. Sign up now and you're going to get 25% off of your membership. Now, pick up the pace on your fitness journey with FitBod today, and your future self will thank you. Get 25% off your membership at fitbod.me/SENLive. That's 25% off at fitbod.me/SENLive.
$6 a year is a great deal. 25% off that's like
that
great.
Is great deal. Huge.
It's really good. So a lot of these, I mean, I've been very, very excited with the with who we've been involved with. And like, as you guys know, we won't get involved with anybody that we don't feel
is. Which I respect.
And,
I don't touch some shit.
Nah, you can't. And in order to really, that's why when they had mentioned FitBod, you do the research on it, you listen to the conversations, and I was like, and I always get messages about people who are listened as we've been, like when I was doing the Oculus and losing weight, people would start trying, then they listen to you because you believe in it. So you believe in it and believe in FitBod and check it
you've
out.
You've been doing workouts on Oculus?
Did you not know that?
Oh, dope, dude. No, boxing and Oculus is incredible.
And it's not just boxing, but it's I have this, there's this other program that I have on the Oculus that it's just like you're working with trainers. And it's like,
the only thing about that I'm like, here for, but like, I remember using the Oculus for PlayStation. The boss I used to have and whatnot. Yeah. And I just, that thing is like heavy on your head. How are you like, I mean, it was, that was like one of the first ones that came out. So
they've got like 10 times lighter, dude. Now?
Okay.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. And you just do, it's, this is the program I use. It's like, is different from, it's Beat Saber, but different.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway. Okay.
One scene I really liked in this one is nice. A call to the world of reality of Tobey Maguire. The scene where he fell and he gets up and goes, "My back!" Because he almost didn't play Spider-Man.
Because
his Seabiscuit injury. That's what that joke was.
Yeah.
So he got wicked hurt on Seabiscuit, and then Jake Gyllenhaal was going to take over and play Spider-Man going forward, and like literally had like gotten in the suit.
Yep.
And then Tobey was like, "Actually, I'm fine.
I'll do it."
And so that back joke.
But they should have definitely done my neck and my back.
That was the time.
That's what, and RIP to him, by the way. He just passed away. Not too
yeah.
Long.
Yeah.
Wait, who did?
The actor who from Friday.
Oh yes, yes. You were going.
I thought the song.
I thought you were going to my
Ludacris is okay.
I'm going from Friday. My neck.
Yes. Yeah. My back. No, I agree.
Yeah.
That fuck.
Yeah.
There's my last one.
No, you went over your last one a long time ago. So I think, I mean, there's a lot. Anything else that we're missing here from the majority of the beats? I mean, it's.
I love the costume. I love how tangible it feels. I love seeing him swing that special.
I think that's you. It's my least favorite of the costumes.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you can touch it.
Yeah, I like
no,
the Bosch.
No, I know that. I know that. I think since we've come forward, I'm just that person that, like, same thing, even looking at, like, houses, I'm like that, you know, that real modern, clean look.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of
what
you get from the next two.
Yeah. Got it.
So, like, looking at back at it, it looks old school.
I like Craftsman, man. I like Craftsman houses.
But I do even like that scene, though, when he's just like, you know, we're, even though I think that the scene itself in the elevator is unnecessary.
It gets itchy.
When he gets, but no, when he says to him, he's like, how'd you get it? He's like, I made it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like that. That part I do.
And
like,
when it gets demolished, it looks authentically demolished. Well, it's not like when superhero suits gets demolished, and they're like, soup. Like, we got to ignore the rip out moment, but later.
I agree with that. I'm just laughing because there's a moment, I can't remember what specifically it was, but like, obviously all of these actors have to get super in shape for the film, right? There's very clearly a moment where a dude lands, a stunt guy, because his arms are like the size of
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, they're gigantic.
And I'm like, that's not Toby.
But that's what happens when you have a real suit.
Yeah.
Which I like. I'd rather have that than like everything CGI, and he always looks a little too opaque. There's something strange about a CGI Spider-Man that I really dug in this. I really liked Mary Jane feeling more like Mary Jane in this one, regardless of the relationship. I liked Alfred Molina, obviously. Like, I feel Alfred like the Alfred Molina is like an unsaid.
Yeah.
But I think overall, it does improve on the same beats of the first one, but the fact that it's the same beats of the first one is a hurt.
What do we think about the Connors relationship in here, too?
I love Dylan Baker as Kurt Connors.
Because it was set,
I like him better
because it was set up. Was he in the third one?
He never got to be Lizard.
Part. They set it up, and then he just...
It should have been
Sandman Lizard. Instead, it was Sandman Venom.
Right.
And then everyone wanted more and more Venom, so it just took away from Sandman and no Lizard.
Let's do it in the fourth one, and there was never a fourth one, right?
Yeah, and the fourth one was going to be Vulture and Black Cat with Anne Hathaway as Black Cat and Malkovich as Vulture.
Is that what it was?
It was cast. It was done. It was happening.
Well, yeah, I remember that. I remember how, not those particular roles, but I remember like that movie was done. It was supposed to come out in like 2010.
They had release dates and everything.
Yeah, it was 2010.
I think it was 2010.
Because it was like 3 years or two, 3 years.
And then it was 1 year later, Amazing Spider-Man. It literally was like we replaced you and then we pushed.
2011. Yeah. That's because they lost the rights. They were going to lose the rights to
it. And that's why they immediately grabbed
it
a year. Because I think it was within 12 months of the date.
That's exactly right.
They lose it. So that was a speed round.
That's why they went to the cast and got it, because people didn't understand. Why are they making another one? Because they're going to lose the property.
And then 2011, ironically, she played Catwoman instead of Black Cat.
Yeah, right. I thought she was a good Catwoman.
I liked her as Catwoman. But it's funny that she in 2010 was supposed to be in the other universes.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you know, also you put Steph Sabra there. That was
great Catwoman.
That was
solid Catwoman.
How did that happen?
I had no idea, but that was hilarious.
I'd watch that movie.
It's Steph Sabra as Catwoman.
You
got to make her sing, though. You got to have a time for Selena to sing.
Sing like a screeching cat.
That's how she got cast.
She knows it. That's her own admission.
I feel like that's becoming, like, obviously her main brand is like FCL and World
and
Girls.
Singing, bad singing.
But then bad singing is like,
why do you think I put Chucky there? Because that's where she sits, and now maybe she'll stop doing that.
Chucky wakes up. Will you shut the fuck up?
Oh, the other thing I didn't do, I wanted to show that. It's just the whole reason. There you go. Finally. Perfect.
Oh, hey.
Spider-Man rewatch. There it is. Nice. That was it. Spider-Man 2, the rewatch. For those people who are joining us today, first of all, thank you for joining us today. But the other thing is that we're going to be doing all of the Spider-Man movies. Next week is Spider-Man 3. Brace yourself. And then we're going to get into Amazing Spider-Man 2. Brace yourself. And then the first two Tom Holland movies. And we're going to wrap it up with Into the Spider-Verse.
You're going to use that as the last one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because I think it plays really well for the fact that the multiverse
and tie
did
into
it
no
already
way home.
And how it's going to tie in.
That makes sense.
And then that leads us right into No Way Home. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do a spoiler heavy.
Yeah.
No Way Home once it comes out, and that's how we'll wrap it up. But
like a retrospective of everything we've gone through.
Yeah, and see what we were right about, what we were probably all wrong about, all of that. So and listen, I'm going to be very clear about this. I know how much you guys love this movie. I get it. And please go ahead and have your discussions and talk about it, what you think holds up, what doesn't hold up. Do you think we're out of our minds? There was something that I saw a comment that I really liked, which said, like, I really enjoy listening to how wrong you guys are.
And, that's why we're here.
But I liked that comment because it wasn't somebody being disrespectful. It was just somebody going, I don't agree with you.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I think we should preface the next episode with these first two movies are exceptional movies. So we've looked at the flaws in them.
Yes.
They are overall good. So we've looked at the things that don't work. Like in my experience, this is an A-. So I was looking at what made it not an A+ or an A. That being said, don't be surprised when we go into Spider-Man 3 trying to find the positives.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
If you come at us with like, why are they talking so good about Spider-Man 3 when they didn't about Spider-Man 2? It's because it's known as the greatest Spider-Man movie. So we had to look at that. Spider-Man 3 is known as the worst. So if we seem to be more positive about Spider-Man 3, we're not on drugs. It's that we're looking at being positive.
I think you're being too positive, thinking we're going to be positive on Spider-Man.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying. Sandman's great.
I haven't seen it since I saw it.
Thomas Hayden Church is great.
I only saw it for the first time, like, fully.
Yeah.
About, like, 4 or 5 years ago. I had randomly seen scenes here and there.
You didn't hate it as much as you thought?
Because everybody was like, this movie sucks.
I just remember everybody crying. I remember everybody cries in that.
So crying in the way that South Park, how the kids cried when the new indie came out. They were like, "They did it! They ruined it!"
No, I just remember. I remember in the movie,
everyone's
crying. I remember James Franco crying. I remember Tobey Maguire crying.
I thought you meant the audience.
No, I mean
that's just inside.
I just remember everybody crying. I mean, like everybody.
Just remember that for me again. I think Franco is the one that walks away with this third one, and especially with and Sandman, the story there with the kid and everything too. Yeah. I think is good.
I don't remember it at all. Yeah.
The fact that Franco became a damn meme with the wink, bruh. Like,
eating the pie.
And then he disappears. Like, I mean.
I love that scene, but it's not a good scene.
Franco is.
He's in it. He knows exactly what he's doing. That's why it's a meme.
That is next week. This week, obviously, was Spider-Man 2. Please go ahead and comment. Tell us exactly what you thought of the movie, what you like about the rewatch. Don't forget today at 4 p.m. we have the rewatch of Empire Strikes Back. Finally, sorry about the 2-week hiatus because we were in New York and I forgot to hit a record button last time. So anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us. Thank you to Winston A. Marshall. Thank you to Koy Jandrew. Thank you to you guys for watching us. That is the big thing. Really appreciate you guys joining us here today. Don't forget to find us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on this channel. Thank you, and we'll see you on the flip side. Peace!
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You just bought a home in the suburbs, but no one told you about all the birds. Specifically this one, who seems to be calling out Roy. Roy. But who exactly is Roy? And why doesn't he ever respond? Maybe Roy is just bird speak for save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. I guess until Roy answers, we'll never know. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.